got the gold in his hand.
That's kind of where I was trying to go with it. Like, I thought you meant just like a note that's backed by gold, not actual gold. Like, what year is it? 18 what?
1850.
1850, and this motherfucker's got doubloons in his pocket. What the fuck? I guess it was kind of around the age of piracy, still.
Yeah, motherfucker just got off goddamn pirate ship.
Can you make change for 2 doubloons?
Give me pence.
Where'd you get these? Spanish galleon.
Welcome back to the Trilateral Troika. This is Steve, along with the other Steve.
You!
And Ryan.
Crank that.
Cracking this one open, pouring one out for Billy Napier. Get fucked.
Who?
The head coach of the Gators. He was.
Oh, yeah, he got fired, right?
Booty. Yeah, the boosters were like, yeah, we're done with your shit.
Yeah.
And somebody is thinking that Lane Kiffin is going to take the job. I'm like, dog, he's not leaving Ole Miss. Y'all are literally...
You mean Lane Kiffin Jr., right?
They had Napier, like, they just had the deputies, like, escort him off the premises, like, off the campus.
Yeah, you can turn your head coach, like, the house they give you, turn the keys in at the front office when you walk by. Actually, we actually packed your entire house for you during the Mississippi State game, so your house is already packed up. Shit's on the lawn.
Yeah, their shit's packed, all right.
Yeah,
no, it's just a cube, like one of those cube storage unit things, like right on the outskirts of Gainesville.
Pods
with his family.
I mean,
living out of his pods.
He'd probably fit in. We got some characters around Gainesville, man.
Oh yeah, you definitely do. I've only been there once, and it was quite an experience.
It's interesting,
dude. We were at this little anime con called FreeCon at what is it? Yeah, at Florida State, right? Yeah, and
no, we're UF.
Yeah, UF. Yeah. So we're down the block at. Like a hotel motel kind of thing, and across.
I think
the street,
you're talking about Tallahassee.
I'm talking about Tallahassee.
Yeah, you're definitely talking about Tallahassee because there's like one or two hotels around UF, and they're like very expensive downtown hotels.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm talking about Tallahassee. I get it confused. I'm geographically disinclined, just so you know.
Tallahassee.
Ugh, not a fan. Not a fucking fan. Never going back.
Oh my god!
On purpose.
Lost to Stanford. Listen, college football this season has just been fucking outrageous. I cannot believe this. This season has been crazy. Like Stanford beat FSU. That's awesome. I never want to hear another FSU fan ever talk about how good the school is. You lost to fucking Stanford.
Stanford.
But speaking of perennial losers, maybe.
Today's episode is about the Cleveland Browns.
Dude, they beat the Dolphins, bro. I gotta call my boy and make sure he's not on suicide watch.
You gotta give Myles Garrett something so he stays on the team.
Oh my god.
Did they just put Tua back in the closet?
Dude, they were starting like a third-string quarterback.
Yeah, because Tua's brain can't take another hit.
I'm telling you right now, Tua's never gonna make it, and the fact that they are continuing to go with him says less about Tua and more about Mike McDaniel. And just being married to this guy when he stinks. He stinks. Yeah. Don't talk to me about the offensive line.
One? Tua or Mike McDaniel? Which one?
Tua. Because if you take Tua out of the equation and you put anyone with just more consistency in there, you're good. Because Tua will make like one right decision and then 16 wrong decisions. He's like Russell Wilson, you know? He'll like make like some baller ass play and he'll be like, oh shit, he's back, baby. The Seahawk lives. And then all of a sudden he'll just like throw the ball directly at the other team over and over
again. Christ, he completed one pass. It does not mean he's back.
Yeah. But that's where Tua is, and Tua's only been in the league for like 15 minutes compared to Russell Wilson.
All right, so listen, who's gonna have more CTE at the end of their career? Tua. Or
Came Scataboo.
Scataboo.
Scataboo. Scataboo's already at Tua's level, maybe even further along. I mean, he literally thinks his head's made out of rocks.
Hilarious.
He had a awesome walk-in touchdown, and he lowered his shoulder. What are you doing? Why are you doing that? It's like that freaking Nigerian video. Why are you running? Why are you running? You know,
CTE is kicking, bro.
No, I think he legitimately has a muscle spasm in his lower back that causes him to lower his head every time he sees another human being. Like, it's some psychological thing. Someone posted a joke about what could stop Kame Scataboo, and it was just like a door that says pool.
Yeah, push pull door.
can't figure this thing out, guys. I keep running into it. It doesn't move.
Somebody equated Kame Scataboo to fucking those old dinosaurs that would just charge each other like head first.
Oh, shit.
So they had a picture of like one of those dinosaurs in like a Kame Scataboo jersey and a fucking helmet in another one.
Bro, I have this friend.
I was crying for like 5 minutes.
I have this friend. He's exactly the same amount of energy, by the way, when we play football. He had Scataboo energy, and he was ridiculous. My brother and him were watching Any Given Sunday when it like right after it came out. You know, like a few months after, because it was on like DVD or whatever. Yeah. And he got so psyched up from that Al Pacino skit that him and my brother went outside and started doing like pass drills or some shit. And he was just, he just tackled my brother on the front lawn. Like he was like, yeah, like that. He's just like losing his mind. I'm like, what is wrong with you? Go play in traffic, pal.
Oh, fuck.
Anyway. Speaking of people getting hit by cars.
Speaking of CTE.
He was actually the first person to get hit by a car. That's why today, boys, we're talking about James Abram Garfield.
Oh, the president?
The president?
Of the president fame.
Hmm. Hell yeah.
Fucking love lasagna.
He hates normal.
Dude, lasagna's the best. I mean, like, you do anything with it. You could put any extra ingredient you want in there. It's still good. You put chocolate in there.
What was in that cup that John drank from?
Huh?
What was in that cup that John drank from in that one comic strip?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we know.
Fucking lean.
That's why John had his head down, you know.
He had his head down with the double
dextromethorphan.
Oh, fuck.
We can't post this episode on Reddit now because I said the word of a drug.
Banned.
Banned.
Immediately.
What did I do? You said a bad word.
So, James Garfield was born the youngest of five children on November 19th, 1831, at a log cabin in what was then Orange Township, which is now Moreland Hills, Ohio.
Hmm. Didn't most of our presidents come from Ohio, or am I crazy?
A large percentage of them did, because it was like the most populous area of the country for a period of time in the 19th century.
So that's why. Okay, all right. I knew there'd be like a reasonable explanation for why people came from Ohio, because the place fucking sucks.
Garfield's ancestor, Edward Garfield, migrated from Hillmorton, Warwickshire, England, to Massachusetts around 1630.
Also a shitty place, Massachusetts. Ugh.
James's father, Abram, was born in Worcester, New York, and came to Ohio.
What's that?
In order to seek a marriage with his childhood sweetheart, Mehitable Ballou, only to find that she had already been married.
There's a lot of guys with that name on the New York Mets. Mehitable. Oh.
Also, speaking of baseball, shout out to Ohtani, dude. That dude deserves to be put on the Mount Rushmore of baseball.
He played the single best game ever. There's not even a comparison. It's never, nothing like that's ever been done in baseball.
Ever.
People have been trying to like bring up like other examples of it, and it's just it's fucking impossible. Even with like the batshit stats some of those like early MLB players had, like Ruth and them, you know.
The only person in the entire history of the MLB that will ever compare to a game as beautiful as Ohtani's game is that pitcher that threw the no-hitter on acid. Like,
oh, he's dude.
Oh, Doc Ellis?
Fucking Doc Ellis.
Yes.
Which we'll never see, but apparently Major League Baseball has the tape of.
Otherwise, yeah.
Ohtani's, I love that fucking... That was that Vanity Fair that posted that originally online? It was such a good article. Because Vanity Fair's had some baller articles. They also had that one about the like French Foreign Legion. Ugh, so good.
Vanity Fair puts out some decent stuff.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway, lasagna.
He instead would marry her sister, Eliza.
Whoa.
Who's born in New Hampshire.
Why? Why did he marry her sister?
Because she was already married.
So he just settled for the sister?
Interesting.
Yeah.
She didn't think that was weird?
I think he did it as a fuck you to her.
Maybe she didn't know. That's kind of weird, though.
James was named after an earlier son of Eliza and Abram, who had died in infancy.
Hmm. That's fucked up.
In 1833, Abram and Eliza joined a Stone Campbell church, a decision that influenced their youngest son's life. Abram died later that year, and James was raised in poverty in a household led by his strong-willed mother. He was her favorite child, and the two remained close for the rest of his life.
So he's a mommy's boy.
Eliza remarried in 1842, but soon left her second husband, Warren, or Alfred, Belden. We're not sure about his actual first name, and she was awarded divorce in 1850.
Okay. That's crazy for a woman to get a divorce in 1850. You get that.
Well, she was in Reno.
James Wood took his mother's side in the matter and noted when Belden died later in 1880 with satisfaction in his diary.
Also, he was happy about it. So
just fucking says,
people being happy about other people dying has been going on for hundreds of years then.
Just says,
interesting.
Yes.
It's almost like if
you want me to throw away these tapes, Mr. Garfield.
It's almost like if you want to be celebrated in death, you should live a good life, and then people won't cheer when you die.
Yeah, nah, someone still will, like the Mormons.
Goddamn!
One more in the books, boys.
Garfield also enjoyed his mother's stories about his ancestry, especially those about his Welsh great-great-grandfathers and an ancestor who served as a knight of Caerphilly Castle. Growing up poor and fatherless, Garfield was mocked by his peers and became sensitive to slights throughout his life.
Jesus.
He would escape from these through becoming a through reading a lot.
That's a good... We were just talking about this yesterday, my wife and I. Like, that's a good way to start off as a genius. You just have to you have to have something that you can avoid so that you can submerse yourself in books.
Yeah.
I mean, often it's terrible. Like, it's like a Good Will Hunting scenario where you're getting physically abused or whatever. But
your life is fucking awful, but goddamn, are you well read.
Yeah. Gotta find a way out of this fucking mess. It's terrible.
He left home at age 16 in 1847. And was rejected for work on the only ship in the port of Cleveland.
Jeez.
He instead found work on a canal boat managing the mules that pulled it.
Do we know why they didn't want him to work on the boat? Because that sounds like a 16-year-old is a perfect time to be put on a boat.
They didn't specify, just that he was not able to gain employment.
Ah.
He instead found Horatio Alger. The author would later use this story as a good effect when he wrote Garfield's campaign biography in 1880. After 6 weeks, illness forced Garfield to return home, and during his recuperation, his mother and a local school official secured his promise to forego canal work for a year of school. In 1848, he began at Geauga Seminary. in nearby Chester Township in Geauga County, Ohio. He later said of his childhood, "I lament that I was born to poverty, and in this chaos of childhood, 17 years passed before I caught any inspiration. A precious 17 years when a boy with a father and some wealth might have become fixed in manly ways."
Okay.
All right.
He attended the seminary from 1848 to 1850, learned academic subjects for which he was not which he had not previously had time to learn. He excelled as a student, was especially interested in languages and elocution. He began to appreciate the power a speaker had over an audience, writing that the speaker's platform, quote-unquote, creates some excitement. I love agitation and investigation and glory in defending unpopular truth against popular error.
Yeah, bud. I feel you, dog.
Geauga, though, was co-educational, and Garfield was attracted to one of his classmates.
So one of his guys was lying, was walking down the street, and Garfield just took his sunglasses and ran away. You know what I'm talking about, that video from the fucking No Kings protest that you sent?
Yeah.
So good. Yeah. So good. I watched it like, I watched it like 65 times in a row.
I laugh so hard every time I watch it.
And it's right after he drops his hard F. Like, mm-hmm. Right after he drops it, they're right like, down. Nope, you crossed the right line, down. Pal. Goodbye.
Too much.
And then
too
it's much. Like, nobody assaulted you, dude. You fell down twice, you dumb shit.
He assaulted himself.
Yeah, he literally assaulted himself. Oh, they tripped me. No, dude, you fell, big guy. Sorry.
Somebody was like, he's definitely going to go home and tell all his friends that he fought an Antifa super soldier.
I was out there. I was on the front lines against Antifa.
One of these, he, she, they, thems
you know,
came up
everyone
to me.
Keeps
this
asking
guy was
me.
Roided out, wearing a wig. And he
everyone keeps me. Asking me.
What was about to make his pronouns were.
Oh, shit. Everyone's always asking me why I'm against Antifa when my father fought in World War II. And I don't think you guys remember, but I fought with my father quite a bit. Oh, man. Oh,
fuck, that's good.
But also leaded gasoline. Oh, man.
Oh, fuck.
I didn't drink all this leaded gasoline. Just had my sunglasses stolen by some F-A-G-G. Oh, man.
Oh.
So Garfield would meet his future wife, Lucretia Rudolph, at Geauga. To support himself at Geauga, he worked as a carpenter's assistant and teacher.
Hmm. Hold this nail.
The need to go from town to town to find work as a teacher aggravated Garfield, and he developed a dislike of what he called place seeking, which became, he said, the law of my life.
Place seeking?
Yeah, the having to go place to place looking for work.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Hobo,
yeah.
Like the actual definition of a hobo.
In later years, he astounded his friends by disregarding positions that could have been his with little politicking. Garfield attended church.
Wait, that's not a hobo, dude. Hobos don't look for work.
Yeah, in the traditional sense, they do.
That's the original definition of a hobo, is somebody that jumps on like the trail, the train lines, goes town to town, just looking for work.
Oh, I didn't know it was. I didn't know it was for work. I think I'm thinking more of a tramp.
Yeah,
I'm thinking of tramp.
I think tramps are just your regular, just traveling around being bums.
Yeah. Okay. I learned something.
Yeah, hobo is not typically a derogatory slur, like a tramp would be, or like a bum.
Yeah, but it's close to one.
It's close to one because at this point people just don't understand. People don't care about the nuance.
No, I mean, it's like one letter off from a real slur.
Oh, fuck.
Garfield attended church more to please his mother early on than to worship God, but in his late teens he underwent a religious awakening.
I'm just here to make my mom happy, okay, folks? Amen.
He would attend many camp meetings, which led to his being born again on March 4th, 1850.
If I don't make my mom happy, she makes his quick oats. They're awful.
Who is the second mom? You said he's born again.
Jesus Christ.
After he left Geauga, Garfield worked for a year at various jobs, including
city.
Teaching jobs.
How the fuck do you spell that?
G-E-A-U-G-A.
I couldn't pronounce that. If you put that in front of me, I think that's a slur.
Yeah, I don't know how you say that. That's just shit. How the fuck do you pronounce it? Wait, here's the thing. It's actually Giga.
Giga.
Giaga. Giaga.
That's how it's actually pronounced?
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now to see. this lady on fucking YouTube, hold on. It looks like a real person instead of that pronunciation guide that just does all the words wrong.
Got a Roddy.
This is TikTok. I don't know if I'd buy this.
Port is Guga County.
It's Guga. Never mind. I'll have to look it up later. We'll just go with Guga. Because that sounds like how a fucking Jersey Italian would pronounce it, you know?
After he left...
Guga.
Guga. Garfield worked for a year at various jobs, including teaching jobs. Finding that some New Englanders worked their way through college, Garfield determined to do the same and sought a school that would prepare him for the entrance examinations. From 1850...
Was he living Moss?
Yes, he was living Moss.
Nice.
He was in the student section.
from 1851 to 1854, he attended the Western Reserve Eclectic Institute, later renamed Hiram College in Hiram, Ohio, a school founded by and still affiliated with the Christian Church. While there, he was interested in the study of Greek and Latin, but was inclined to learn about and discuss any new thing he encountered. Securing a position on entry as janitor, he obtained a teaching position while he was still a student there. Lucretia Rudolph also enrolled at the Institute, and Garfield wooed her while teaching her Greek.
Okay.
He developed a regular preaching circuit at neighboring churches, and in some cases earned one gold dollar per service.
Gold dollar? What's a gold dollar?
It means that it's probably more valuable than a banknote from by a bank.
Oh, I see. So it's like federal currency.
Well, it's not federal currency because the federal currency doesn't exist yet. It's just a value of a dollar in gold.
Yeah, but who's backing who's gold?
Probably from a bank, but it's gold, so its value is universal.
That's why we have the gold standard.
As long as you have the gold.
Well, yeah, he has the literal coin.
Okay.
He's got the gold in his hand.
that's kind of where I was trying to go with it. Like, I thought you meant just like a note that's backed by gold, not actual gold. Mm. Like, what year is it? 18 what?
1850.
1850, and this motherfucker's got doubloons in his pocket? What the fuck? I guess it was kind of around the age of piracy still. Yeah.
Motherfucker just got off a goddamn pirate ship.
can you make change for two doubloons?
Do you have any pence?
Where'd you get these? Spanish galleon.
Hey, listen, can you break that? Can you break a doubloon for me?
I tell you what, these guys from Gugu, they always got some money on them, you know?
By 1854, Garfield had learned all the Institute could teach him and was a full-time teacher.
That's probably why he was so like lazy in the comic strip, you know? He knew everything. He didn't need any more effort, you know?
I know I hate Mondays.
I've learned everything there is to know, and I know one thing. I fucking hate Monday. And I love lasagna.
Garfield then enrolled at Williams College in Williamston, Massachusetts as a third-year student. He received credit for 2 years study at the Institute after passing a cursory examination.
I tried doing that when I got out of high school. They said, nah.
He was also impressed with the college president, Mark Hopkins, who had responded warmly to his letter inquiring about admission. He said of Hopkins, "The ideal college is Mark Hopkins on one end and a log with a student on the other." Hopkins later said of Garfield in his student days, "There was a large general capacity applicable to any subject. There was no pretense of genius or alternation of spasmodic effort, but a satisfactory accomplishment in all directions.
Much better.
After his first term, Garfield was hired to teach penmanship.
Specialization nearby, is for ants, bro.
Paul Knoll, Vermont, a post Chester A. Arthur had previously held.
Chester Copperpot. Chester Copperpot.
Garfield graduated Phi Beta Kappa from Williams in August of 1856.
Yeah.
He was named Salutatorian and spoke at the commencement. His biographer, Ira Rutkow, writes that Garfield's years at Williams gave him the opportunity to know and respect those of different social backgrounds, and that despite his origin as a unsophisticated Westerner, socially conscious New Englanders liked and respected him.
Fuck you. What a Jesus Christ. From that to H.P. Lovecraft, fuck you.
In short, Rutkow writes, Garfield had an extensive and positive first experience with the world outside of the Western Reserve of Ohio. Upon his return to Ohio, the degree from a prestigious Eastern college made Garfield a man of distinction. He returned to Hiram to teach at the Institute, and in 1857 was made its principal, though he did not see education as a field that would realize his full potential.
I mean, I realize I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but the fact that this guy turns into the U.S. president is just, like, our standards have fallen so far. And they were like, we actually kind of raised the bar with Obama, like, just as far as academia and just straight up ability, you know?
Yeah.
And then it's like, all the way back down.
Yeah, Garfield's kind of like the opposite of Trump in like every regard.
In like every possible measurement, yeah.
The abolitionist atmosphere at Williams had enlightened him politically, after which he began to consider politics as a career. He campaigned for Republican presidential candidate John C. Fremont, 1856. In 1858, he married Lucretia, and they had 7 children, 5 of whom survived infancy.
This guy's a real cocksman, too, it seems like it, anyway.
It sounds like he's putting in the work, dog.
Yeah, he's burying a lot of boners, you know.
And wait, you said that 7 kids, 5 lived?
Yeah.
That's pretty good odds for back then, too, in the 1800s, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Soon after the wedding, he registered to read law at the office of attorney Albert Gallatin Riddle in Cleveland, though he did his studying in Hiram. He was admitted to the bar in 1861.
Hi, I'd like to be in the bar. All right. What's your background? I am a fucking turbo genius in a million reasons. Okay, you're in. Sign here.
Local Republican leaders invited Garfield to enter politics upon the death of Cyrus Prentice, the presumptive nominee for the local state Senate seat.
Okay, so how old was he?
So this is in 1861. He was born in 1831, so he was 30.
Wow.
Damn.
He was nominated at the party convention on the 6th ballot and was elected, serving from 1860 to 1861. Garfield's major effort in the state Senate was an unsuccessful bill providing for Ohio's first geological survey to measure its mineral resources. After Abraham Lincoln's election as president, several southern states announced their secession from the Union to form a new government, the Confederate States of America. Garfield read military texts while anxiously awaiting the war effort, which he regarded as a holy crusade against the quote-unquote slave power. In April of 1861, when rebel forces attacked Fort Sumter, this would begin the Civil War. Although he had no military training, Garfield knew his place was in the Union Army.
Oh, okay. At least he's fighting on the right side, I guess.
At Governor William Dennison's request, Garfield deferred his military ambitions to remain in the legislature, where he helped appropriate the funds to raise and equip Ohio's volunteer regiments. When the legislature adjourned, Garfield spent the spring and early summer on a speaking tour of northeastern Ohio, encouraging enlistment in the new regiments, And following a trip to Illinois to purchase muskets, Garfield returned to Ohio and in August of 1861 received a commission as a colonel in the 42nd Ohio Infantry Regiment.
Colonel Homestar 10.
The 42nd Ohio existed only on paper, so his first task was to fill its ranks. He did so quickly, recruiting many of his neighbors and former students. The regiment traveled to Cape Chase outside Columbus, Ohio, to complete training. During this period, on November 19th, 1861, Garfield became a Freemason at Magnolia Lodge No. 20 in Columbus, Ohio, receiving the third degree after his military service was completed in 1864.
Steve, you didn't say this guy was evil.
He was in the Illuminati.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. God. Illuminati confirmed.
In December, Garfield was ordered to bring the 42nd to Kentucky, where they joined the Army of the Ohio under Brigadier General Don Carlos Buell. Buell sounds quickly like assigned Garfield the
Punch-Out character.
Buell quickly assigned Garfield the task of driving Confederate forces out of eastern Kentucky, giving him the 18th Brigade for the campaign, which, besides his own 42nd, included the 40th Ohio Infantry, two Kentucky Infantry Regiments, and two cavalry units.
How many people is that?
That's 63. Probably... That's probably, like...
We're talking a couple hundred, a couple thousand?
It's probably, I think, around 400 people.
Okay.
400, wow. Could sell out a Firehouse Punk show.
They departed Catlettsburg, Kentucky, in mid-December, advancing through the valley of the Big Sandy River. The march was uneventful until they reached Paintsville, Kentucky, on January 6, 1862, whereas cavalry
they stopped over there at Gagoo to get some of his mom's sauce. Nobody makes it like mom.
Engaging the rebels at Jenny's Creek. Confederate troops under Brigadier General Humphrey Marshall held the town in numbers roughly equal to Garfield's own, but Garfield positioned his troops so as to deceive Marshall into believing the rebels were outnumbered.
You need to say it right. It's Jenny's Creek.
Oh! Marshall ordered his... For president.
Marshall ordered his troops to withdraw to the forks of Middle Creek and on the road to Virginia, and Garfield ordered his troops to take up the pursuit. They attacked the rebel position on January 9th, 1862, in the Battle of Middle Creek, and they the only pitched battle Garfield commanded personally.
What does that mean? What is a pitched battle?
It means one that they actually like set up to fight.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right. Because this is the Civil War. This is, like, where they met with each other, discussed how they were going to line up directly across from each other, and just shoot at each other back and forth.
Yeah, yeah.
Like gentlemen.
Like fucking absolute gentlemen.
At the end of the fighting, the Confederates withdrew from the field, and Garfield sent his troops to Prestonburg to reprovision.
I can't remember the name of the game, but there's a game coming out where you can basically go back to, like, medieval times, Civil War times, and... drive basically a Toyota Terrace wagon, like a mounted 50 cal, like a technical, like through a medieval battle. It looks so fucking fun. Like, what? imagine being like on like the battlefield with like knights and horses, and you're just like mowing them down with an AK. That's fucking hysterical, and it is coming out. It's about to be a beta on Steam. I gotta figure out what the name of it is, but it looks hilarious.
They don't know what bullets are, so they're gonna think you're literally like force killing people because they're not gonna understand what's happening. Fuck.
I want to go back in time to like the 1800s and give somebody a Zen and just watch them just lose their fucking minds.
Yeah, they give you give them a Zen and then they give you some weird leaf that grows in their backyard that you've never seen in your entire life that's 20 times more potent than Zen. Like, unbelievable Zen. It's like pure ultra nicotine. Oh, this is good, but it feels kind of like it's maybe a little, I don't know, expired. Here, try some of this long leaf. Oh, shit.
They're just like, no, it's hash. It's like, yeah, yeah. Everybody does this. You're like, yeah. What?
Yeah, we sell it freely here. Marijuana and hash, no problem. What do you mean the blacks have it? Ah, fuck.
In recognition of his success, Garfield was promoted to Brigadier General. After Marshall's retreat, Garfield's command was the sole remaining Union force in eastern Kentucky, and he announced that any men who had fought for the Confederacy would be granted amnesty. They returned to their homes, lived peaceably, and remained loyal to the Union. The proclamation was surprisingly lenient, as Garfield now believed that the war was a crusade for the eradication of slavery.
As it was.
Following a brief skirmish at Pound Gap, the last rebel units in the area were outflanked and retreated to Virginia.
You cannot just glaze over that. Where was that brief skirmish?
It's a Pound Gap.
Okay. That's what your mother said to me on the night you were conceived. She said, Pound Gap. And
Pound
I said, aye, aye, Captain. Yes, sir, Colonel, sir.
Oh, God.
Garfield's
promotion. You may be the Colonel out here, but in bed, I'm the Colonel. Okay, dear. Direct me as thou wilt. Okay, Pound Gap.
You could be the Colonel. Your figure looking good.
Oh, my God. Jeez. This guy's got lines.
Garfield's promotion gave him command of the 20th Brigade of the Army of the Ohio.
You got to fill out like a LinkedIn profile, but instead of doing a LinkedIn like style profile, you treat it like it's like Tinder. Like do the opposite in LinkedIn. It should be fucking hilarious.
Which he received orders from to join Major General Ulysses S. Grant's forces as they advanced on Corinth, Mississippi in early 1862.
Ulysses.
Before the 20th Brigade arrived, however, Confederate forces under General Albert Sidney Johnston surprised Grant's men in their camps, driving them back.
Who the fuck is that? Albert Sidney Johnston?
Yeah.
Fuck is that?
I've never heard of this guy.
Garfield's troops received word of the battle and advanced quickly, joining the rest of the army on the second day to drive the Confederates back across the field and into retreat. The action, later known as the Battle of Shiloh, was the bloodiest battle of the war to that date, and Garfield was exposed to fire for much of the day, but emerged uninjured.
I just wanted to know how they figured that out. Like, did they go there with like a rain meter like I have outside, you know? Just like measure it. I got 2 inches of blood here.
They're probably sitting there being like, yeah, how many guys did you lose? All right.
Well, each one of you has about 1 gagoot's worth of blood. Still, so
y'all lost 4,672 men. They lost 9,103. Oh, God, this is the bloodiest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
Major General.
Thanks for ruining my joke there with, like, actual calculation.
Oh, is that really how they do that?
Probably.
How do they know it's bloody, though? Some of these dudes could have died.
That was my joke, dickhead. God damn it.
Major General Henry W. Halleck, Grant's superior, took charge of the combined armies and advanced ponderously toward Corinth. When they arrived, the Confederates had fled. That summer, Garfield suffered from jaundice and significant weight loss.
Oh, no.
He was forced to return home where his wife nursed him back to health. When he did come home, Garfield's friends worked to gain him the Republican nomination for Congress, but he refused to campaign with the delegates. He returned to military duty that autumn and went to Washington to await his next assignment. During this period, a rumor of an extramarital affair caused friction in the Garfield's marriage until Lucretia eventually chose to overlook it.
Oh, boy.
Garfield repeatedly received tentative assignments that were quickly withdrawn, much to his frustration. And in the meantime, he served on the court-martial of Fritz John Porter for his tardiness at the Battle of Second Bull Run.
You say his tardiness?
Yeah.
He was late to the war, so he got court-martialed?
That he purposely was late in arriving so that he wouldn't be put in danger.
So he's like Musashi?
Yeah.
That's a really shitty thing to do.
He was convinced of Porter's guilt and voted with his fellow generals to convict him. The trial lasted almost 2 months, from November 1862 to January 1863, and by its end, Garfield had procured an assignment as the chief of staff to Major General William S. Rosencrantz. General's chiefs of staff were usually more junior officers, but Garfield's influence with Rosencrantz was greater than usual, with duties extending beyond communication of orders to actual management of his Army of the Cumberland.
Cumberland Farms.
I swear to God, I was just thinking about Cumberland Farms. The little
Cumberland Farms.
That was the greatest little fucking Cumberland stop and rob you could ever go to, because sometimes they had gas, sometimes they didn't, but it was literally just a convenience store where you could get a pack of mobs and a couple scratchies. Fantastic.
Cumberland Farms. That fucking shitty-ass music.
So much better, like, to-go coffee than White Hen Pantry. Fuck the White Hen, dude.
Okay, we had Cumberland Farms in Jersey, man. They freaking had, they had that, like, iced tea. It's fucking good.
Yeah. I have opinions about Cumberland Farms, okay?
Motherfucking Cumberland Gap. Pound Gap. It's like a visual, just a fucking hentai visual novel. He's just playing it. Pound Gap. Oh, yeah, here we go. Four hours in and finally gets a pound some gap.
Rosencrantz, though, enjoyed conversation, especially when he was unable to sleep. And in Garfield, he found, quote-unquote, the first well-read person in the Army, and an ideal person for him to talk to late into the night. They discussed everything, especially religion, and the two became close despite Garfield being 12 years younger than him.
They were just close friends? That's it?
Rosencrantz, who had converted from Methodism to Roman Catholicism, would soften Garfield's views of his own faith.
Originally, I was a Method man.
Garfield recommended that Rosencrantz replace Wing Commanders Alexander McCook and Thomas Crittenden, as he believed that they
were in the Air Force.
But Rosencrantz ignored the suggestion.
I just had the Airwolf music come in my head.
With Rosencrantz, Garfield devised the Tullahoma campaign to pursue. I called you. You heard what I said.
He said Tullahoma. No, I'm just kidding.
He devised the campaign to pursue and trap Confederate General Braxton Bragg in Tullahoma.
What did I just tell you?
It's a John Daly commercial. I know someone's saying my name.
After early successes, Bragg retreated toward Chattanooga, where Rosencrantz stalled and requested more troops and supplies. Garfield argued for an immediate advance in line with demands from Halleck and Lincoln. After a council of war and lengthy deliberations, Rosencrantz agreed to attack.
And we're talking about, like, the Lincoln, like, or play yes. Abe, right? Okay.
Yes. Commander-in-chief. Big hat. Love to wrestle.
Big AL.
Probably gay.
Possibly gay, yeah.
Possibly.
Probably.
Or by.
At bare minimum.
At the ensuing Battle of Chickamauga on September 19th and 20th of 1863, confusion among wing commanders over Rosencrantz's orders created a gap in the lines, resulting in a rout of the right flank.
Yeah, he said, because they saw that gap, they said, pound gap.
Rosencrantz concluded that the battle was lost and fell back to Chattanooga to establish a defensive line. Garfield, however, thought part of the army had held and, with Rosencrantz's approval, headed across Missionary Ridge to survey the scene. Garfield's hunch was correct. Consequently, his ride became legendary, and Rosencrantz's error reignited criticism about the latter's leadership. While Rosencrantz's army had avoided disaster, they were stranded in Chattanooga, surrounded by Bragg's army. Garfield sent a telegram to Secretary of War Edwin M. Stanton, alerting Washington to the need for reinforcements to avoid annihilation. Lincoln and Halleck responded to the request for reinforcements by sending 20,000 troops to Garfield by rail within 9 days. In the meantime, Graham was promoted to command of the Western armies and quickly replaced Rosencrantz with George H. Thomas. Garfield was ordered to report to Washington, where he was promoted to Major General.
Okay.
According to historian Gene Edward Smith, Grant and Garfield had a guarded relationship since Grant promoted Thomas rather than Garfield to command of the Army of the Cumberland after Rosencrantz's dismissal. While he served in the Army in early 1862, friends of Garfield approached him about running for Congress from Ohio's newly redrawn and heavily Republican 19th district. He worried that he and other states' appointed generals would receive obscure assignments, and running for Congress would allow him to resume his political career. The fact that the new Congress would not hold its first regular session until December of 1863 allowed him to continue his war service for a time. While he was home on medical leave, he refused to campaign for the nomination, leaving that to political managers who secured at the local convention in September of 1862 on the 8th ballot. In the October general election, he defeated D.B. Woods by a 2-1 margin for a seat in the 38th Congress.
Yep. Take that, D.B. It's a big fucking cigar in his mouth. You gotta pound the gap, D.B. You can't just touch it and slap around. You gotta pound it.
Days before his congressional term began, Garfield lost his eldest daughter, 3-year-old Eliza, and became anxious and conflicted, saying his desolation of heart might require his return to the wildlife of the Army.
He had a wild motherfucking Army. There's nothing more stringent and
not then.
And what the fuck? The wild
not during the Civil War. Like, yeah, in between battles, they would just like gamble and like see hookers and stuff.
Yeah, they were pretty bad.
They had parades of people who were just like the dealership that would fleet them over a Dodge Charger would literally follow the camp as opposed to being like seated across from the base.
I got Camaros at a 27% APR for 96 months. Let's go.
And the first down payment is exactly the price of the bonus they gave you. He also assumed that the war would end before his joining the House, but it had not, and he felt strongly that he belonged in the field rather than Congress. He also thought he could expect a favorable command, so he decided to see President Lincoln. During this meeting, Lincoln recommended he take his seat in the House, as he said there was an excess of generals and a shortage of administration congressmen, especially those with knowledge of military affairs. Mm-hmm. Garfield accepted this recommendation and resigned his military commission. Garfield would meet with and befriend Treasury Secretary Salmon P. Chase, who saw Garfield as a younger version of himself. The two agreed politically, and both were part of the radical wing of the Republican Party. Once he took his seat in December of 1863, Garfield was frustrated at Lincoln's reluctance to press the South on their rebellion. Many radicals, led in the House by Pennsylvania's Thaddeus Stevens, wanted rebel-owned lands confiscated, but Lincoln threatened to veto any bill that proposed to do so on a widespread basis.
Why?
Because he didn't want it to be like... He wanted it to be like a soft peace and resumption of things. He didn't want to create like an atmosphere that would cause like a conflict for years to come.
And this is why we find ourselves in the position that we find ourselves today, because Lincoln didn't have the balls to do what needed to be done and stamp that shit out to a man.
Well, pretty much.
It's fine.
In the debate on the House floor, Garfield supported such legislation and discussing England's glorious revolution hinted that Lincoln might be thrown out of office for resisting it. Garfield supported the Emancipation Proclamation and marveled at, quote-unquote, the strange phenomenon in the world's history when a second-rate Illinois lawyer is the instrument to utter words which shall form an epoch memorable in all future ages.
Damn, they called him a second-rate Illinois lawyer. Whoa, call him an ambulance chaser, dog. That's fucked. That's Big Abe. Abe said, take him out back and wrestle me. You take that back.
Rugged.
The top hat won't even fall off.
That statue of Lincoln that's in the Illinois State House, I think it is. The one where he's like a teenager and he's shirtless.
Oh my god, hang on. I need to look this up real quick now.
He was a wrestler, dude.
Garfield not only favored the abolition of slavery, but also believed the leaders of the rebellion had forfeited their constitutional rights. He supported the confiscation of southern plantations and even exile or execution of rebellion leaders as a means to ensure a permanent end to slavery.
Oh, dude. I just looked up this shirtless Abe Lincoln statue. Bro, that is a twink. There's no fucking way that they could have ever made him look.
He's like,
Thirst trap Lincoln.
He could be considered a twunk.
Twunk? Wow. Yeah, I think it's twunk.
Yeah, it's like somewhere between a hunk and a twink.
That. Yeah.
I can't believe that. Okay, anyway, continue.
Garfield felt Congress had an obligation to, quote unquote, to determine what legislation is necessary to secure equal justice to all loyal persons without regard to color. He was more supportive of Lincoln when he took action against slavery. Garfield would show leadership early in his congressional career. He was initially the only Republican vote to terminate the use of bounties in military recruiting. This is because some financially able recruits had used the bounty system to buy their way out of service, which was called commutation, which Garfield considered reprehensible. He gave a speech pointing out the flaws in the existing conscription law. 300,000 recruits had been called upon to enlist, but barely 10,000 had done so, with the remainder claiming exemption, providing money, or recruiting a substitute. Lincoln appeared before the Military Affairs Committee, on which Garfield served, demanding a more effective bill, even if it cost him re-election. Lincoln was confident he could win the war before his term expired. After some early issues, Garfield, with Lincoln's support, procured the passage of a conscription bill that excluded commutation. Under Chase's influence, Garfield became a staunch proponent of a dollar backed by a gold standard, and strongly opposed the greenback, which is the dollar that's essentially like as it is today.
Just regular dollars, right?
Yeah, essentially just backed by like its perceived strength. Essentially, faith in the United States government is the backbone of it.
What do you mean it's perceived strength? I thought the dollar was backed by the gold standard, and gold is all in Fort Knox, and that's what they've told me to believe.
Well, it hasn't been backed by the gold standard in 90 years.
Oh my god, I've been lied to.
He also accepted the necessity of suspension of payment of gold or silver during the Civil War with strong reluctance. He voted with radical Republicans in passing the Wade-Davis bill, designed to give Congress more authority over Reconstruction, but Lincoln defeated it with a pocket veto.
You get one, it's always in your pocket. You're like a fucking referee in the NFL. Pocket veto. It's like, fuck.
It's like the cash in the bank at in WWE.
Yeah.
He's got the briefcase.
Oh, Money in the Bank or whatever, yeah.
For Money in the Bank, yeah.
Yeah.
Garfield did not consider Lincoln very worthy of re-election, but there seemed to be no viable alternative. Of Lincoln, he said, he will probably be the man, though I think we could do better. Garfield attended the party convention and promoted Rosecrans as Lincoln's running mate, but delegates chose military governor of Tennessee, Andrew Johnson. Lincoln was...
What's his name from California? Gavin Newsom.
Yeah. Gavin Duke Newsom.
Yeah, Gavin Duke Newsom. He's probably going to be the man, but we can do better.
Lincoln was reelected, as was Garfield. By then, Chase had left the cabinet and been appointed Chief Justice, and his relations with Garfield became more distant. Garfield took up the practice of law in 1865 to improve his personal finances. His efforts took him to Wall Street, where the day after Lincoln's assassination, a riotous crowd drew him into an impromptu speech to calm their passions. Garfield said, "Fellow citizens, clouds and darkness are round about him. His pavilion is dark waters and thick clouds of the skies. Justice and judgment are the establishment of his throne. Mercy and truth shall go before his face. Fellow citizens, God reigns, and the government at Washington still lives." This speech made no mention or praise of Lincoln, and was, according to Garfield biographer Robert G. Caldwell, quite as significant for what it did not contain as for what it did. In the following years, Garfield had more praise for Lincoln. A year after Lincoln's death, Garfield said, "Greatest among all these developments were the character and fame of Abraham Lincoln." And in 1878, he called Lincoln one of the few great rulers whose wisdom increased with his power.
Didn't this motherfucker just say we could do better?
Well, you know, you reassess them, you know, like you thought he was awful, and then it comes time to put him in the hall. You're like, yeah, you know.
I was always a fan.
Yeah, I saw that brick at the TV when he missed that pass, but.
Except for Albert Bell, who will never be in the Hall of Fame. Because nobody likes him. He's just,
nobody.
He's just mean.
When in Washington, Garfield attended Vermont Avenue Christian Church, which later became the National City Christian Church, a building constructed and funded by the church. In 1864...
that fucking sentence.
The word church was used way too many fucking times.
Jesus. Garfield would attend church, which was in a building called a church, which was built by
down
a church.
Down the street. Down the street from the church.
Now, yeah. Believe it or not, that's what really happened, and I'm not churching up the church.
In 1864, the U.S. Senate passed the 13th Amendment, which abolished slavery throughout the Union.
13th, really?
Yeah, the 13th Amendment.
Jeez. In 1864, bro.
See, this is why I'm an originalist. You know, the first draft was good enough.
Oh my god.
The bill.
Those fucking idiots in the Supreme Court. What's that chick's name?
Amy Coney Barrett?
Mm-hmm. I'm an originalist. Oh, sure you are, Betty.
I love when I hear a Republican conservative woman tell me that they're an originalist because the
time to free up your position
or whatever around here. Like she's like, I'm an originalist, and I'm like, do you know what that means?
That means you can't vote.
Constitution.
Means you can't divorce. That means you. That means you need to get in the kitchen.
You're a baby maker.
Yeah.
Right? No way.
And why are you? No, you obviously don't believe in it because you're holding a public office, you stupid woman.
Yeah. Fuck, bro. God, you're so dumb. Anyway.
Oh, it's so bad.
The bill failed to pass the House by 2/3 majority until January 31st, 1865,
man,
when it was then sent to the states for ratification. The amendment opened other issues concerning African American civil rights.
Yeah, Ross, Garfield sent it to the states.
Garfield asked, what is freedom? Is it the bare privilege of not being chained? If this is all, then freedom is a bitter mockery, a cruel delusion. Garfield supported black suffrage as firmly as he supported abolition. President Johnson sought the rapid restoration of the southern states during the months between his taking of the office of presidency and the meeting of Congress in December of 1865. Garfield hesitantly supported this policy as an experiment. Johnson, an old friend, sought Garfield's backing, and their conversations led Garfield to assume Johnson's differences with Congress were not large. When Congress assembled in December, much to Johnson's annoyance, without the elected representatives of the southern states who were excluded, Garfield urged conciliation to his colleagues, although he feared that Johnson, a former Democrat, might join other Democrats to gain political control. Garfield foresaw conflict even before February 1866, when Johnson vetoed a bill to extend the life of the Freedmen's Bureau, charged with aiding former slaves. By April, Garfield had concluded that Johnson was either crazy or drunk with opium.
Ah, nice. And when we're talking about Johnson, we're talking about President Johnson?
Yeah, Andrew Johnson. He was... He was so drunk on the day of his inauguration that there's a newspaper quote that someone transcribed of him speaking, and it has like all the hiccups he was making because he was so drunk.
Oh my god.
They kept the hiccups. That's so good. Who? Like, Johnson?
Wasn't Andrew Johnson a huge piece of shit?
Yeah, he was a huge piece of shit.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't do too much.
That, boys, is part one of our exploration of President James Garfield, and we will eventually get to his assassination.
Oh my god, I forgot, man, that this dude got clapped.
You know, you could have just left it there and waited until next episode. And then Ryan would have been freaked out, would have made for good copy, you know?
I definitely totally forgot this dude got clapped.
When when the
Steve, you like got the timing. You got the timing of a Russian-made sedan.
A Polinsky or whatever it's called.
Yeah, those like the fucking shitty Russian cars. I love watching those.
PUBG.
Oh, dude, they're so good. Oh, dude, they are just the worst. The worst car. I thought the Chinese ones were bad, but oh my god. Fucking yeah, no, Soviet Russia. Like, ugh.
There was this video.
They had a brake pedal in it, but then they also had a brake pedal.
It was Britney Spears with Ryan Seacrest, and Ryan Seacrest starts talking about like his tasted women or something like that.
Yeah,
and Britney Spears just has this look on her face because she thought Ryan Seacrest was gay.
Oh my god,
he does give a little bit of a vibe, you know, just a little.
You could see her. She's sort of a little back from them, and she just has this like look on her face, and she's sort of mouthing like women.
Women, really?
He likes women.
She's a fucking. What? She's a hoot, man.
Dude, listen. Oh, yeah. No pop star will ever be as funny as Cardi B. I will die on that hill.
Also, Cardi B is incredibly intelligent and well read.
Yes.
Just fucking funny.
Yes. Yes.
She like breaks the mold, man.
Yeah, she's like Marissa Tomei and My Cousin Vinny.
Yeah, she literally is. Literally.
She has even the same like cadence.
Yeah, yeah, instead of Italian though, she's just what, Dominican?
She's just hood rat.
He's like, that is why FDR is my favorite president, because
he was just so unusual. FDR. Alright. Good night.
Alright. With that, good night and good luck.